to the Abdominator, and I will shout slogans at you.
Coaches, welcome back to the Talking Split podcast. I am Rob Calder, the manager of coach education, I think it's called now, joined by Zoe Carr, high performance coach for the Victoria Country Women. Welcome, Zoe.
Thank you for having me.
Nathan Cooper-Brown, head coach of the Victoria Country Men. Jeez, I'd struggle with that more than I should have. Welcome, Coops.
Good to see you guys. I've just come out of the all-night gaim, so I'm feeling really, really good, ready to go. Yeah.
Oh, a gaim.
Yeah. Oh, look, I am so unfamiliar with the gym, I call it James.
Yeah.
Like, it's where I'm at. So, coaches, once again, thank you for listening on this one. You can follow along on the Talking Split socials. Every Monday, there's a draw that goes up. Every Friday, there's a podcast going up. So, we'll get that through until probably about the start of December, give or take, which is when we'll wrap this up for the year. If you're able to leave a rating and review, that would be fantastic too. Next week podcast, we have Darren McInnes coming in from Core Advantage to talk strength and conditioning for our athletes in particular. So any questions that you might have in that space, send them through and we'll address them with Darren next week. So we'll put a story up on the Talking Split Instagram page as well. So you can drop any questions in there that you might have for Darren and we can address a couple of the myths and things that are just maybe a little bit off the mark when we talk S&C for our athletes. Reminder, we've got a mailbag episode coming up, which is our last one for the year. That's in a couple of weeks' time. Any questions you've got, send them through. Same deal. We'll put an Instagram story up where you can just send anything through that you want to ask the question on, and we'll go from that point. But, of course, where would we be without everyone's favourite music?
You know you make me wanna shout out my cold chairs, out my cold chairs, out my cold chairs. Come on now.
Shout out this week to Coach Claude Nelson. So he's a young coach from Shepparton who is head coaching the 16-2 Northeast Bushies side and is an assistant coach at Country Cup. At a young age, Claude goes above and beyond to not only better the athletes, but to also get over to Ballarat for BV events in order to better himself. The whole approach that he has been the more time that he can spend on himself, the more he can give back to the kids. He's a legend, and we hope he will achieve big things in the sport. So thank you very much to the coach that sent you through. We won't put you on blast or anything like that, just to keep it anonymous. But it is fantastic to have coaches recognise what other coaches are doing in that space. It's, so if you do have any coach shout-outs and you want to hear that music once again that makes Zoe cringe every time.
It's the worst.
It's not the worst. It's fantastic.
I love it. I dance every time.
Yeah, I'm the same.
You both do.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
Because it's great music. What we are going to talk a little bit about today, and look, I'm a little bit hesitant to throw the topic title out because every time I put a title out on one of these things, we go off on about 14 different tracks and then I have to revisit it and say, actually, it's not about what this is.
But we're actually going to hit the title this time.
I'm confident we are staying on target for this one. Running individual workouts for players. So this is a topic, obviously this time of year, when our competitions do start to wind up, our players get that that sense of freedom when there is almost no organised basketball on for them coming up for the 6 to 7 minutes that they get off during the course of a year. They're looking around for stuff to do over the Christmas break. And I know when I was in that coaching space, this was usually the time of year where I'd be hitting up players and it's like, hey, don't just sit around and do nothing. Like, this is a good time to go and get some work in. If you want to do sessions, I'm available from this date to this date. You know, let's get some work in if you really want to do it. So we are going to talk about what it looks like for an individual session. We'll talk about this from a couple of different angles, but both from the coaching side, if you were to run it, what was the content you'd be looking for, but also from the player side in how to approach it. And potentially from the family side, how to make sure that the right things are being done in this space as well, because that's just as important as we look at it overall. But I suppose my first question, before we've even sort of ripped the Band-Aid off on the rest of it, and we'll start with you on this, Zoe, do you think there's value in individual training sessions?
Yes, I do, definitely. I think I don't agree that it always needs a coach and it always needs to be inside, but I do think you can learn a lot and you can refine a lot in an individual session when you can slow it down or break something down, particularly if it's something like a shot technique or something like that. So yeah, I would definitely say there's value in it. What I would caution people in doing over this break though is wanting to have, you know, 5 or 6 in a day or something, you know, crazy like that. Have the break. Like, you need to have the break. This is the best chance for you, especially if you're one of the vertically challenged athletes that we have. This is your best chance to grow. So, you know, rest, recover, sleep, eat right, take that break, fall in love with the game again, sort of miss it a little bit. Yeah. But just it's more about keeping in touch than it is, you know, working yourself into an absolute lather. So, you know, you might go, if you go 45 minutes, even if just something like one-on-one or something like that can, if you don't have access to a coach, it's so valuable. So I think if you've got a coach though, you know, get your training hit in and then that's it for the day. And I would probably, my advice would be try and do it, you know, 9 o'clock in the morning or something like that. So then you've got the rest of the day to just enjoy and be, I know it sounds a bit la-di-da, I guess, or a bit hippie or I don't know, but I think this time I wouldn't be looking to replicate your workload. I'd be looking to just make sure your workload doesn't dip so much that when you come back into 8 games in 2 days, you don't sustain injury.
Yeah, what about from your end, Coops?
Yeah, absolute value in it. You know, you look around the world and this is what the best do. You know, they're constantly refining their craft. They're trying to add things to their game or solidify things that are points of difference that, you know, are potentially earning the money in the sport. So it's an absolute must. There's what Zoe's talking about is spot on. And we actually had the conversation last night about our athletes. You know, we do some positional work as part of our SPP session on a Monday night. And the coaches were talking about, like, you know, the back end of the 10 minutes, like they're starting to struggle. And we made the point of saying, yeah, because the first 5 minutes, we're actually got them working at the level that they should, you know, in an individual workout. And that's what ties into, you know, what Zoe's saying, which is, you know, these kids that, especially on holidays, go down and spend 4 or 5 hours at the basketball court, you know, pay their $5 for shooting or casual shooting or whatever and stay there all day. Now, love the passion to want to be in the gym that long, but you're not getting anything out of it after the first half hour, right? Going into a workout with a plan, you know, going in there with a focus to just work your tail off for 20, 30, no more than 45 minutes, like what Zoe was saying, you know, like at game pace or faster and then getting out of there. Like that's an individual workout. That's how you get something out of there. And it's definitely not hippie at all. And I love being hippie, so I'll lean into it. Kids need to be kids. And you can do a 20-minute workout. You can alternate each day with a 30-minute low-impact conditioning session. You know, swimming, riding bike, something like that. And then the next day you do your 30-minute lift. So that's, you know, 20-minute workout, 30 minutes S&C, and everything else should be at the beach, sleeping, reading a book, hanging out with family and friends, and you're setting yourself up for further success. So I'm really excited that we're talking about this topic today.
Well, it also leans into coaches, I think, for mine, because for a lot of coaches too, this is the time of year where you do get a break. Like where you're not coaching, you're not beholden to everyone else. And like I mentioned at the very start, I would usually tell players, I'm available from this date. Don't contact me beforehand. Mm-hmm. Like this is, and it's not a coming from a bad place or anything like that, but it is also time for coaches to get a little bit of a reset, reintroduce themselves to their family members that they probably don't see for the other 11 months of the year that is going on as well. So there is a two parts to it, I think, that coaches, yes, like get yourself some downtime. Players, get yourself some downtime, but just don't fall off the cliff in terms of your workload and what that potentially looks like.
But you look at it, what Coops is saying is 100% correct. If you are working individually at pace for, say, 30 to 45 minutes, you're probably working harder than your whole training session.
Yeah.
Yep.
Because you have no breaks, there's no rest, there's no rep where someone else is going or anything like that. So whilst it's not as long as maybe your two-hour session that you normally have, it's you in action is probably more. So you just get that done and then get out of there.
Yeah, and it really is going with a plan as to what it is. And I know I was always, like with players I used to coach, I'd go in with a session plan to it as well. But there would also be that caveat of, look, if I'm coming in to work you out, that's fine, but do not drag the chain on this thing. Mm. Like, this is also my time that I'm happy to give to you. That's not a problem at all. But my stock standard line to players was, I'm not going to work harder than you are for your benefit. Mm. Like, I'm happy to give up my time. That's not a problem, because I genuinely believe I enjoy those sessions. Like, it's, if I look at it now, do I miss game coaching and that sort of stuff? Yeah, a little bit. I just really miss the workouts of getting players ready for a game, seeing how it goes, does it translate, what we do. Because you do have to be a little bit careful too, that you're, this is a time where, and you mentioned it before, Coops, you can lock in on something you really want to develop.
Mm.
And it's not just that generalist approach of, oh, let's just go get shots up for 25 minutes. It's like, well, that's, for mine, I find that a little bit misguiding from what it is. It's like, well, that could actually be your off day. Like, instead, like, everyone sits there and says, oh, you know, we're just going to have a light training session. A light training session is rarely a light training session. It's still, you know, at least, depending on where you're coming from, an hour. Whether it be your travel time in or out, you might be a country athlete or a regional-based athlete where it's potentially 2 to 3 hours, depending on your travel time or where you have to go to for it. You've got to be really careful. I would be putting a plan, like, if I'm a player or if I'm a coach, I would be putting a plan together for everyone involved in this. It's like, right, where are your off days? I need to see them. What are you doing? Who are you doing it with? You know, you got to be careful you don't encroach too far into their personal lives, but just be aware of what their physical load is going to look like and making sure they do have time off. But if you're going to do that for the kids, do that for yourself as well as the coach. When do I need to spend time with my family that I haven't seen because I've been driving all over the state, you know, coaching everyone else's kids? So just being mindful that if you have to drag a kid kicking and screaming to the court to get them to work out, that's probably not the kid you want to be working with.
Don't bother. Yeah. Have the day off.
That's right.
And you know what? If the kids don't want to do that, that's okay too.
Whatever.
Like, not everybody wants to grow up and, I mean, they might want to, but they might know. I know there's a lot of female athletes in particular that are very aware that they're not going to make their living out of basketball. So, if they don't want to do that extra work, that's fine, provided they understand that then with that comes some, you know, you might not start or you might not get as much time as someone else, or these are the things that happen. And if they're okay with that, cool. Well, like, we don't have to turn everybody into this, you know, work out every day, do all this stuff every day kind of person. What we want is for them to love basketball.
Well, and you've hit on it, because where I was going to go with this is, sometimes as coaches we can motivate via fear, where it's like, hey, if you're not doing this workout, someone else is, and you need to understand that you're missing out and they're going to outwork you. And this constant grind mentality that, oh, you've got to be up and you've got to be working every single day and beat everyone up in the morning. It's like, hey, you know what? That's not for everyone. Like, there are some people that can do that. There are others that can't.
Mm.
So they have to be more efficient about what they do. There are going to be kids that have summer jobs that simply cannot get out and do everything at the same time because they're working at Kmart or Target or something like that. Then they want to go and catch up with their friends and see their family because that's the only real window they have. If that's the case, no problems. We're not trying to hold this over people. This is supposed to be if you want to get better, here's the avenue to get better.
Mm.
If you're not able to do it because of this, this and this, that's fine. We'll figure out another way.
This is why what you said, Rob, about having a plan is so important. You know, that a player still should be able to create a pretty basic but easy to follow plan that, importantly, and I think we'll come back to this word a lot in this episode, is context. Yep. You know, the context of what you're working on and how it relates to your game. And so if you know that you're only going to have one 30-minute workout in the span of a 3 days, or it may be because maybe the family's planned a day trip and then I've got work and then whatever, that plan is everything. So that I'm going to maximize those 30 minutes to make sure that everything that I'm doing on floor relates to who I am as a basketball player, what I'm trying to get better at, and how it's going to potentially impact, you know, the first thing that's down the road, which for some it might be the Australia Day tournament, for others it might be ECC or Country Cup or SCC.
Yeah, and you do have to be a little bit careful. I know I've done this, I think I was coaching under 12s team at the time, and I put together three generic plans that any of the kids could do at any. And look, you're coaching under 12s, everything's generic at that stage. Like, you're not really specialized in everything. Jeez, just run without tripping over. That'd be nice. But it was that kind of thing where it's like, well, okay, I'm going to put three workouts together. You can pick and choose. Whichever one you want to do, you can do. That's fine. But we also had a little bit of a competition going where they could get extra points. So if they did one of the workouts, it was, say, worth 15 points. But if they went for a run or a swim or a walk or something like that, that was worth a certain amount of points as well. So there are other ways to kind of keep up. And we would use that as a little bit of a motivation tool. Like, the kids would sort of connect with each other and it's like, hey, I'm on 26 points. And one of the other kids is like, geez, I'm still on two. I've got to get off my backside here and go do something. So we use that as a little bit of a motivate via competition. And you sort of think about all the wearables we have now and those types of things, and our phones that track our steps and all these sorts of things. We kind of live in a competitive world without even realizing it. It's like, you think of like the Whoop bands that will track your sleep scores and all this sort of stuff. We live in that world already. So I always use that as a little bit of a way to, hey, just do something each day. It doesn't have to be basketball. You would still get points if you were going to do something. Like, if you went, I think we even put in there, it's like, if you went to the movies, you got 5 points for it. Like, it was just a way of just not having them sitting around, not seeing any sunlight.
Yeah.
Over the course of a 4 to 6 week period. So it was just something to have them sort of form a habit, I suppose. And I mean, the context behind that was just be doing something. Don't sleep your days away. Like, it's okay. If you want to sleep till midday, sleep till midday. Like, it's the dream. We all get it. But, you know, the reality is, these kids have lives, and we have to be mindful of that as coaches, that we're not trying to overdo it by, you know, dragging them kicking and screaming onto a court to do something that may or may not be relevant to what they're doing and where they want to go. Because that's the other part of this is when we say have a plan, it's okay for the players to have a plan, but as coaches, we need to walk into those individual training sessions with a plan. How would you go about establishing that plan with a player, Coops, as to what you're going to do in those sessions?
Athlete journal.
Yep.
This is what it's for. You know, and it would be to sit down and have that conversation. So, okay, let's grab your journal out. Let's go back and look at maybe, you know, we'll start at the last month. Let's look at, you know, your breakdown. You know, what have you done well and why? You know, what do you need to get better at and how? Let's look at some of your performance so we can look at a little bit of data. You know, did you, you know, maybe some high scoring games or whatever it may be. And we're pulling all that information out of the journal, because that's why it's there, is to put that information down. And that's how we're establishing our plan. So, you know, okay. The other part of that is, I'm really big on the 80-20 rule. I know a lot of NBA teams and NBA trainers talk about this a lot in, you know, it's 80% on your strengths, 20% on your weaknesses. So you really honing in on the strengths, honing in on the point of difference that's going to help you separate yourself from the next person. So we take that information, we think about the 80-20 rule and say, okay, well, what are the things that we need to really lock down on? Let's make sure you're feeling really good about that part of your game. And then what's a couple of the weaknesses or one weakness that we can start to attack? So it would start there.
Yeah, I think the player involvement in what you're doing is vital. But the other part of that, Zoe, is probably your coach. Like, if that's not a player that you would normally coach, is linking in with that player's coach and finding out what they need.
Yeah, so the first thing is, especially if you're dealing with senior athletes, it sounds like a bit of a brag, but I was lucky enough to be able to work out Jade Melbourne while she was here. And that was just as great for me as it was for her. But my first question for her is, what do you want to work on? Because you are old enough, experienced enough, you know. And the second question was, and at the time she was with Seattle, and I was like, what does Seattle want from you? Like, that's where we were sort of, that's the mindset we had to be in. But if you're working with junior athletes, always, and it's from a consistency perspective, but it's also from a courtesy perspective, always contact the coach of that athlete if they're not in your team and check in, see what they are working on, what they need from them. Now, you might not necessarily agree, but the courtesy is to, you know, even just let them know that you're working that athlete out as well. Because if that athlete rocks up to their training and they're exhausted because they've been doing, you know, individual workouts every day, now that coach knows why, as opposed to just thinking that maybe the athlete's being a bit lazy. So definitely check in, find out what they need. One of the things I'll always ask as well for a junior athlete is, you know, what do you run? Like, what's your offense? So what sort of shots do you need? What sort of, you know, and work on those sort of things. So, yeah, it's athlete involvement and coach involvement, I think, is key to getting everyone on the same page and getting some success.
Yeah, and there's both of those should link back to where you started, Coos, with the athlete journal. You would hope that the coach is giving the player feedback on what's being said to them, whether it be during the game, whether it be after a training session, whatever the case might be, that goes in the journal. That's now got some validation for where you need to go with this. And I'm really big on, like, if you're a trainer coming in with a plan in place, like, if that thing's not written down, I'm sick of hearing from coaches, and this sounds like a bit of a whinge, and it's not a whinge, but the amount of coaching sessions I go to where the coach says, can you evaluate how I go or give me some feedback? The first thing I walk in, where's your session plan? Oh, it's in my head. No, it's not. Like, this is not a good starting point. And it's the same with individual player workouts. The amount of stuff that is going on, and usually you have smaller numbers, so it tends to be the coach and the player, or maybe two players, depending on how you've scheduled it. You need to have a plan in place for what's coming next, because it's high reps, high involvement, high intensity. You don't have time to just go, oh, what can I do now? And it's, I mean, it's really easy at training sessions if you don't have a plan, because you can always find a little 4-on-4 drill that you can do somewhere. When you've got to play a 1-on-1, you need to be able to say, hey, we're going from this to this to this. They need to see that, hey, there's some progression in where we're going as well. This is not just, you know, we've scattered 82 cones all over the court and you've got to dribble around all of them 4 times blindfolded with one hand tied behind your back, hopping every fourth dribble. Yeah. Like, you know, you see those sorts of workouts and it's like, I don't know that you've put a lot of thought into this training session. This
no,
is just
put a lot of thought into how to be just so different to everyone else. And that's the thing, like, it's simplicity is key, you know, in these sort of things, because you're going to exhaust these athletes very quickly. So you need to get bang for your buck. So things that aren't relevant, keep them out. Like, well, it's,
do you remember the Damian Lillard clip that he put up? We'll be going back sort of 5 or 6 years now, but it was him and his personal trainer, which is Phil Beckner, who does a great job, obviously. But they put it like a little gimmick sort of video together with like Lillard shooting threes with scuba gear on and all that sort of stuff. And they're like, you know, we're trying to train him for like the high pressure environments and this sort of stuff. And it's like, the only reason this is funny is because it's eerily true in a lot of ways too. Like, there's always a lot of truth involved in humor. So you do have to be really careful. But for mine, if there's not a plan in place and you're a player that you turn up and the coach is just there with no plan, that's a red flag for me straight away. And if I'm a parent and I'm bringing my child in to be worked out, it's like, hey, what are we working on today? And the coach doesn't know, that's a problem. But it's also why they won't come back for session 2, 3, or 4.
Yeah.
Like, that's straight away, they're going to run for the hills.
Yeah, I ask coaches too, like, you know, are you looking at the film? So we'd like to think that most of our coaches are finding some way to film some practice or game, no matter what the level or the age. You know, even if it's, you know, you've got under 12s and it's hard, you know, to get parents to do it on a Friday night, well, just, you know, put your phone up or put something up at practice where you can just maybe get 2 or 3 minutes of footage. Something is better than nothing. And to be able to go back and then look at it and say, oh, okay, you know, little Rob, like, you took, you know, in this 5 minute section of practice, you took 2 corner threes off the move and a dribble pull up going, you know, left off a ball screen. Okay, well, we've just established, you know, 2 key shots that you need to be practicing that we now put into our plan. Yep. And so athlete journal, film, conversations with other coaches, like, we should be gathering all this data and all this information to make this plan as specific to that athlete as possible.
Yep.
Yeah, you don't need the cones, you don't need those things. Sure, they're great and there's a world in which all those different things can be utilized, but at the end of the day, if you've got great context and if you've got a great plan that's specific to the athlete, you're going to get something out of it.
Yep. I've got a little bit of an unwritten rule, like, if you need more than 4 cones, that ain't it. Like, that's like, no problems using them as a point of reference and things like that. But if you need more than those, something's gone drastically wrong here, especially if you're in an individual session, like for team training.
Like, if you've got under 12s and you're trying to teach spacing points on the floor and stuff like that, it's obviously a very different thing. But,
well, first things first, contact us and we'll tell you where to get your Order of Australia, because that is the hardest job in the world to get spacing for under 12 kids.
But what we're talking about is more skill set type, type things and. And making sure that, a big thing for me is that just that it's relevant. It's relevant content to that athlete and to basketball, because things are starting to, I think, from some of the trainers and things that I see online, are getting a little bit out of hand. But if you're a parent listening to this and you are paying somebody to run a workout and you're not getting these conversations, these plans, you know, this sort of level of work for your athlete or for your child, move on.
Yeah.
Well, the other part of that is if you're, and I'm very conscious of how I word this, purely because the Vic Country girls have been brilliant at coming in and doing some drills for us on a Saturday morning so that we can film them and then put them on the talking split stuff. If your child is the product, maybe that's not the area to be in. Like if you're, coach spends more time filming them to make content than they do actually giving them teaching points and direction, that's probably not the world you want to be in.
And there are some great trainers out
brilliant
there.
Ones.
And
absolutely
if you are looking for some trainers or you're unsure, or, you know, get in touch. We're happy to help. So we're certainly not saying all trainers, you know, stay away from all trainers or anything like that. But it's, you know, there is a bit of a there is a bit of a thing where people want to make money out of basketball because it's fun and it's sometimes easy. So they go in, they make their money, not a lot of care, and they move on. And then you're sort of left with, oh, I've spent all this money and my kid's not any better. These are sort of the baseline stuff that you need to make sure that you're getting if you're particularly if you're paying for a workout or a training session.
Even on that, just what is the number? Like, like how much is too much? Like, and look, how long is a piece of string? Like, it genuinely
it depends
is.
On how many kids are on the court too.
That's where I was going with this, because if you're one of nine, you're probably not getting that personalized attention that you're potentially paying for in that world. Whereas if it's one-on-one, well, then yes, you are. Like, all the attention from that coach will be towards you in that space. And I know for mine, like, I've probably tried to go away from one-on-one workouts a little bit more recently, just purely because how much can you really give where it's not game-like? And that's, we've talked about it a lot. You know, I am a games approach person. I like everything to be competition. We do it okay with a couple of reps on air, that's fine, but I want another defender in there, and I'm not the guy. Like, it's, I'm not going to play lockdown defense on you as we're going through a workout, especially if you want feedback from me, because I'll be breathing heavy.
You're pretty good on the bag.
Very good on the bag. Like, I feel like that's not necessarily something to be super proud of, though, but can hit someone with a bag. So there's no problem with that. But you do have to be really careful when you get into this. Like, know what you're walking into. Ask the questions. I don't think anyone's going to – look, and anyone that does look at you wrong for asking these types of questions – isn't your person. Like, I think it's best for everyone if you can go in with a clear understanding of what this is going to look like, how it's going to work, you know, what's the split. Because there have been plenty of times where I've been working at kids, and full transparency, payment has transpired between the two, no problems with that. But then you get into a world where it's like, yeah, but who's paying for the court hire? Does that come out of my end? Does that come out of your end? Are we able to use the court for, like, all those sorts of things start to come into it as
insurance.
Well. Insurance comes into it. Like, is this coach even accredited? Do they have a working with children check? Mm. Like, for mine, I don't like doing workouts one-on-one. I always feel like there needs to be a second kid on the court or person on the court working out with them. But
if it's one-on-one, the parent has to stay.
That's where I was going next. Like, if it's one-on-one, the parent has to be around, or a guardian has to be around, at least from a child safety perspective. And again, I just think that's best practice more than anything else. We're not saying anyone's done anything wrong. It's just the best way to handle it. Like, if there's an injury and you have to run off and get something, who's staying with the injured person in that sort of world as well? So there's a lot of reasons behind that.
But on the other side too, if you're a trainer and some of this stuff, you're like, I haven't even thought of this, you don't know what you don't know, and that's okay too. Like, we're not trying to, like I said before, smack all trainers, but we just want the best for the kids and the best for you. So because if you can get these things in, all these things in line, you then become someone when people contact us for who do we get for a trainer, you become someone we send them to. So if you're not sure, get in touch as well. We're happy to try and help out with what you need. But in terms of talking about one-on-one, I think if in the plan, the number one core value, core skill set that you want to try and improve over that time is shooting, then I'm okay with that because there's a technique sort of element to that where you can really – you're just there with one person. You can break it down. You're not worrying about being hit by other basketballs or somebody standing around doing nothing while you're dealing with that one athlete. But for mine, the magic number is 4 for an individual workout because and I always tell them to tape. Because there needs to be, again, I'm a games approach coach as well. I want them to play. I want them to, you know, have a defender. Can you? It's one thing to do something 1-0. Can you do it against a defender? Because if you can't, we've achieved nothing. So we need to be able to see that. So 4 for mine is in a individual workout. Doesn't mean I wouldn't do a workout with less than 4, but I've always found those ones to be the most beneficial and sort of the most fun as well.
When we're talking about the money and the trainers, it brings me back to, you know, the conversations that a lot of coaches have been having for a while now around this issue of, you know, everything is now organized. I have to be indoors with a certain ring, a certain coach, that, you know, everything's organized, you know, that we've spoken a lot about the days of just pick up and so on has gone, and we know from multiple sports, but football in particular, you know, the games played on the streets of Brazil and so on of building that creativity and awareness. Can we fight it a little bit to go running to a trainer? Can we look at building more self-awareness? And, you know, we talk a lot about self-awareness on the pod. Well, here's an opportunity to do it because the best of the best, and it happens quite early for them, they can visualize, they can create times on floor. They can put defenders on the floor that may not exist. You know, they can imagine and build these moments to work through as an individual. So that maybe they don't need a parent, and they don't need a trainer, and they don't need an indoor court. They can just get out there and oh, I'm in this pick and roll, and that defender's there, and this guy's here, and this is what I need to do, and then just go for it. Because that skill is only going to benefit them in the long term. There's I think I've spoken about it before, but there's an episode with Cody Toppett, who's done a lot of work with NBA players and college players, and he spoke about James Harden in particular, and that when they were doing their workout, and again, this is, you know, 20 minutes, 2 hours before a tip-off, so again, hard, 20 minutes hard, that he was brilliant at doing that. That he was creating these moves and was thinking about, okay, I need to do this low rip here because this big player has got his hands up, and then I've got to go high glass finish because the center's coming over to shot block, and I know the center we're playing tonight is 7 foot, it's Rudy Gobert. And, you know, like these sorts of things like really play into the imagination, the creativity, the ability to understand who you are as a player and what you need to get better at.
Well, we talk a lot about visualization, right? Mm-hmm. And that plays into that too, of being able to, you know, this player's coming from there. If I can visualize that, then when it comes to game time, I can scan that area because I've practiced that before.
100%.
But that, if you don't have access to anybody else. But I love what you just said there about maybe fight the trainers a little bit and play some pickup, play 1-on-1, 2-on-2, 3-on-3, get some friends and, you know, and again, it only, especially if it's like 1-on-1, 2-on-2, you only need 30 minutes. Yep. Like, it is, it does not, if you're playing, you only need 30 minutes. But you will get so much more out of that. Decision making, skill set, you know, fun, all of it. Like,
just organized chaos.
Yeah.
Like, you're going to have to make decisions. You're going to have to play a different role than what you would normally play. You're going to be able to be responsible for dribbling the ball or having to play in the post. And it was interesting. Nick Abdusevic actually sent it through yesterday, the rivalries. Eurobasket clip on YouTube. So you can jump into YouTube now if you go. I think it's like Rivalries episode 4 from memory. It's about Belgrade. And in particular, it's the Derby. Which one do you go with?
Derby.
I'm a Derby, yeah. Okay, cool. Derby. For what divides the town, essentially. And it's either you're either partisan or you're Zvezda. And, you know, they are big and they are into it. But they were talking about it, and it was like, we have so many outdoor basketball courts in this country. And one of the players was saying, I look out of my apartment and I can see like a sea of basketball courts just there. And there is, it doesn't matter if it's rain, snow, 40 degrees, there will always be someone on that basketball court, and at least 2 to 4 people, because it's always a game.
Mm.
And he's like, the amount of times I want to go down there and play, like, it's just in his blood that he wants to go down there. But that's what they grow up on, is pickup.
Yeah,
they have to find ways to play, and it's like, well,
and what would you? What's something you connect with them when you think about them?
Yeah, the fun, flair, the enjoyment,
and you know, and they explore things, and you know, they're willing to throw the behind the back pass and all that sort of stuff because they've done it out there where it doesn't matter.
It's trial and error learning.
Yeah, that's right.
You have to find a way, and the only way you get better at something is by screwing some things up every now and again. You got to find different ways, and I think that's the fun part of it. It's, and it almost takes it away, because I've thought about this for a lot of years, and it's like, do we organise like a BV pickup tournament where it's like literally you just turn up and work it out? It's like, but it kind of loses something if we organise it.
Because
like we want it to be player driven in that space because that's where the fun stuff happens, like the open runs and those types of things that you sort of see this time of year as senior teams are kind of in season, but they're not in season at the same time. There's a lot of fun in that, but it has to be organised.
But what I would say, if you are looking to do something like that and you want to go down to a court, don't, as much as it's more expensive, don't pay the casual shooting amount, because you could end up with any random on your basket.
Yeah.
Hire the half court and then that's yours, and you can, you know, you can hire it for an hour or something like that and just and use that because – yeah, because there's nothing more frustrating than when you're sort of mid-pickup game, things are getting real, and then here comes, you know, Johnny from
NBA. Like, that's in full, like, Vancouver Grizzlies singlet with the Seattle Supersonics shorts and Jordan 4s.
Who can see that you're playing a game but doesn't care, because he's paid his casual shooting fee, and so he's going to use the basket.
Philip Seymour Hoffman in A Long Came Polly, right?
There you go.
That's the guy. That's the guy. That's
exactly it. Exactly it. But, I mean, it's a good point, though. Like, it is try and find... like,
that's,
I mean,
but that's the most to organise it.
Yeah.
You know, other than, hey, going to play some pickup today or tomorrow.
Outdoor court,
you know,
somewhere.
Want to come. Mm. Yep. Bang. That's it. Then turn up and play. And then start, you know, being creative. Put some, like, little rules on yourself. If you're a big... and everybody else has turned up is guards, you know, all right, one in every 4 possessions I can play in the post. You know, so then you're still getting your fix where you get to be successful and whatever, but it's forcing you into something different. That's the point. And I think sometimes our young athletes get a little bit caught being worried that they're not good at things, so they only do what they're good at. And it's like, no, the whole point is to... obviously, work on your strengths, no question. We want to make you good, great, and you're great elite. But that sort of environment is where you just you try new things. You know, if it doesn't work, what's the worst that can happen? If you're outside, you might have to walk a little bit further to get your basketball because it's rolled away. Like, that's probably
it's rough
it.
Trying to practice the corner three when it's like, oh man, if I shoot this thing long, I have to go and chase that. Like, that is a rough deal.
Yeah, I'm thinking I've got flashbacks of Hurstbridge Primary School and it like border on down the creek.
it's an issue.
But it's just to change the mindset of to what you're actually doing. And again, it comes back to the plan. What are you actually trying to get out of this? If you're just trying to keep up your fitness, fine. But if you're genuinely trying to get better, work on the stuff that you struggle with. Yep. You know, it's a free environment.
So when we talk about putting a plan together and some content in particular, if we work on, say, a 45-minute training session, I like to start my training sessions with just a little bit of touch sort of work. Mm-hmm. So mic and drill is one that I roll out, and I understand everyone's, you can't do mic and it's not game-like. I'm fine with mic and it teaches touch. It teaches you where to go on the backboard. There'll be times where I'll sit there and say, hey, do it off the same hand, same foot. Go reverse, go inside hand, inside foot. You've got to score it, but it can't be in the small square on the backboard. You've got to go slightly outside that, or you've got to make a little like baby hook on the finish. Just ways to have them see the ball go through the net really quickly, get them just feeling just the movement. Ball in their hands. Yeah. Like that's all it is. It's not designed for, if you do this, you will make more shots in games. Yeah, look, you might. But to be honest, it's just to get them moving. Like that's a thing for mine. I like to have players see the ball go through the net a lot early because it puts them in a good frame of mind. Whereas if they take... And there were people I used to work out where it was like we'd go 20 forward, 20 reverse, 20 outside hand, outside foot, 20 inside hand, inside foot. And there were times where it's like, hey, we're like 14 minutes in. You're still going.
The inside hand, inside foot, that's rough.
Yeah. The amount of times that hits the bottom of the ring is they haven't given themselves enough room is crazy. But it is. It's all touch stuff. Like I love to start training sessions with that. From that point on, I want to get them into a little bit of sort of functional movement, like a little bit of sort of crossover stuff. I don't love the ball handling on air. Like it's not bad, but to be honest, if I'm just going to stand on the spot and dribble it, what do you need me for? Like I would rather give them a little bit of just sort of combination movement, front crossover between the legs, behind the back, onside into a couple of different things and just get some moving around. Again, get them warmed up, get them moving and that sort of stuff. And then I'm kind of getting into the core part of the workout. So it's that sort of 5 to 10 minute range where they get a little bit of the sort of touch, a little bit of movement, and then that next little bit is where it's like, okay, it's on now. Now is when we're going at it. Now is what I need to see from you. If this was game pace, this is what I need to see. This is what we're trying to replicate. How do you guys go with, say you're working and coming off a flare screen, for argument's sake? Do you work on that until they've got it down, or do you work on it to a number? What's your preference between the two coops? Like, where do you end up with it?
Everyone's favorite answer.
Yeah.
Depends.
old Derek Best.
it's obviously it's player dependent. So again, it comes back into the plan. We've added a flare screen action to our motion. You're going to be receiving shots coming off this flare screen action. Maybe it's something that's quite new to you. Let's work on our footwork. So for this individual workout, we're process over outcome.
Yep.
We're just getting a feel for how your body feels, coming off that screen because it's obviously a lot different to other screens, getting your footwork inside, outside, getting balanced, being able to shoot the ball. So we'd focus in on that. An older athlete, that maybe needs some confidence, we could go for time and, just talk about some ways in which they can just see the ball go through the hole. Or then if it's an even maybe more elite athlete, it's like, okay, we're going for, this certain number of makes in this certain number of shots. So challenging that player to be like, all right, you've got to get 8 out of 10. We're at game pace. They're going under every time. You've got 10 threes. You got to make 8 out of 10, or it's a penalty. So we're constantly kind of moving the focal point, depending on the athlete.
Yep, and it's a great point because not everyone needs the same thing, obviously. But there is an element when you're teaching young kids, and flare screens is probably a fairly good example. Actually, the footwork is a little bit weird for a lot of people. Like they're not quite sure, and in particular, like, are you flaring to the 45? Are you flaring to the quarter? Your footwork is going to change a little bit from that. So how are they getting the ball? Do they have to do something before they get the ball? Because with that sort of stuff, I like to have them do something, pitch it to me, and then as if they're coming off a flare, just to see if we can work two or three things at the same time. It's like, yes, I want you to get that jumper away for sure, but I need some stuff beforehand to get into that.
Like come off the mid-pick, pitch to you, and then come off the flare.
Then come off it. I think that's a good way to do it personally.
That's a great way just to fold in some other things that you know, like some ball handling or some passing. You know, we can't waste 5 minutes, not waste, sorry, wrong word, but we can't spend time on, you know, stationary ball handling or stationary two-player passing. I can fold in this passing on the move or making a double, you know, dribble move or whatever it may be. I'm a big fan of, I think that's really important. And then the other part is some constraints and some decisions.
Yep.
So it's just some really basic things like, you know, with that flare screen, you know, if you're lucky enough, let's say there's two coaches, one athlete, or two athletes, one coach, change the read on the screen. So, you know, sometimes it's the defender chases and it's a curl for an adaptive finish. Sometimes they cheat underneath, it's a three. There's some ways to add some decisions that we know are going to make, again, the workout more game relevant.
Yeah. Yep. And if you don't have another person there, so if it is a one-on-one workout, so some of the things I would do with Jade would be exactly what you said there. Come off the mid pick. She had to pitch it one-handed, then come off the flare. I'd throw the flare to her, but if I clapped, the ball had to go on a throw down and pull up jump shot. If I didn't, then she was to catch and shoot because I didn't have a defender there to change the decision for her. Not obviously completely ideal because that's not what she's going to see in a game, but it's more the fact that there's an action and a reaction.
Yep.
So having to be more aware of things around her than just her and the ball.
Yeah, absolutely. And you can do that with like colours, numbers, whatever it is. Yeah. Like, you know, if it's an odd number, it's going to have to be this. If it's an even one, it's going to be that. I think the decision-making element that you can throw into that is really important. Yep. And it's funny, after every rep, are you chase down your rebound and go finish it, or are you just like reps done if it's made or missed? Like, which way do you go with it, Zoe?
Depends on where the ball goes. No. Like, so if it goes, you know, onto the next court and whatever, just come back and let's do another rep. But if it's close, like if it's inside the key on your miss, yeah, chase it down and finish it.
Yep.
But I am then take your time getting back to your line. I'm not a run back to your line. You know, take your time getting back to your line because when we're on, we're on.
Yep.
And you need that time to just recover and get ready. And I think
the quality
what
of the
ends
rep.
Up yeah well what yeah. ends up happening yes. is you end up going that sort of half pace the whole time as opposed to game pace in it and then walk. I don't care. Like, take your time getting back. But once you put the ball to the floor to start it, we're on, and that needs to be game pace.
I love that determination. You know, not half pace the whole time.
Yep.
100% in the rep.
Yep.
And then relax, refocus, and then we go. Like, let's be game pace or faster when it matters.
Yeah. Because that also gives me time to give that feedback too.
Yeah.
So, like,
how much are they hearing?
Well,
if they're gassed going back to the next one, and you're trying to give them information, they're not hearing anything other than, "Geez, it's hot in here, and this sucks."
So it's always, they rebound. Like, let's say they're having to go back to the high out, for example. That's where we're starting. I won't start talking to them until they reach the three-point line. So they've had that time walking to get there, to take a couple of deep breaths and just get their hearing back. Then I start talking to them. Then by the time they've got to where they need to go, we're on again.
Well, if you start punching them with feedback straight away, they never have to self-evaluate, reflect, work out where they're at. Like, you've got to give them a little bit of time to sort of work out, did I shoot it left? Did I shoot it right? What do I need to adjust on the next one? Then you can just reinforce.
Yeah.
Like, I think asking the question is probably the best way to go with it.
Such a great point. Yeah, such a great point. Beat me to it. This is such a fantastic way to really coach a whole session with open-ended questions.
Yep.
Like, to really put it back on the athlete every single time. How did that feel? What did you see? How were your feet?
Yep.
What could you do different next time? Where were your eyes on that shot? You know, like, you could just coach in questions the whole way, tie it into that little bit of rest, and then bang, hit it again. You know, and so not only is that great for the athletes to develop everything you just said, Rob, around the self-evaluation and the self-awareness, but also you as a coach to improve your question asking.
Yep.
And one of the things you do have to be really conscious of is if you're messing with someone's shot at these sessions, you will be running because that won't go in real quick. Yeah. That's a long-term adjustment rather than a short-term adjustment. And one thing that is as true as time
if you ask for more arc in someone's shot, they are shooting that thing short by about 2 feet and you're on every time. So great adjustment, but you've got to be okay with the fact that it won't be perfect straight away.
That's where then, in your plan, if you are messing with the shot, don't go to a score.
Yep.
Yes, that's right.
Definitely. Like you're in that particular drill or activity, you're not, the measure of success isn't the scores. The measure of success is the consistency of the technique or
The transfer,
you know, whatever it is.
Mm. Yep.
If you get that, you know, let's say the number, I often go to six. I think that's it's not too big where they coast and it's not too little that it's over in 2 seconds. So if I get six of those in a row that are dynamite, I don't care what's happened, you know, in terms of the finish. They can practice the finish later, but the technique part is what we're working on there. So you've got to change what the success criteria is.
Yeah, I love that point. You know, and building on that, don't be afraid to take away the rim. Mm. Don't be afraid to take away the ball.
Yep.
We used to do a Euro form shooting series. It was start from half court, and it was just like stepping in on the catch or just stepping in with the ball and shooting the ball up in the air. Or even I think the first one we would just shot fake it. So it was like we're working on our feet with the lift of the ball.
I remember watching you do that. Yeah.
And then the next one you would shoot it up in the air. And then the next one, so you would catch it and then you would shoot your shot. So you'd actually take three shots, you know, as part of the series, but only one was at the rim.
Yep. And it's a great point because you hit on one of the questions that I love earlier. How did that feel? Like that should be front of mind every time you're talking to one of these kids. And, you know, some of the kids will give you good. Thanks, mate. Like,
legend.
Any chance of a little more than that? Like, it's, but you know, be prepared for them to give you some feedback. I didn't like it; it felt awkward. Okay, no worries. Did it feel awkward because you've done it a certain way for 6 years and now we're changing, or did it feel awkward because it's just something new to you? Like, it's you got to be a little bit careful. But the open-ended questioning is brilliant.
Story time.
There we go.
We had a import in Ballarat. Fantastic young guy, good scorer, and you know, helped us with some success there. And he was a lefty, and he had this kind of funky hitch to his shot. And me being the brazen know-it-all shooting guru that I am, I was like, we gotta get rid of that. And you know, and we started working on it, and you know, he was making change because he was, you know, he loved the sport. You know, this is his job. You know, he believed in me trying to help him get to the next level. But it just got to the point where he's like, this doesn't feel good. Mm. You know, this is not for me. And that was a real turning point for me to understand that everybody's shot is like a fingerprint.
Yeah.
You know, that everybody's is their own and they're not going to look the same. And yes, there are some key fundamentals that we know are going to help the ball go in. But at the end of the day, it's about putting the ball in the hole. And and then I just kind of let go and we're just like, okay, well, like, let's go back to where you feel comfortable and let's look at some of those key things that maybe we can work on just to make it a bit more consistent. But that kind of ties back into what you're saying, which I think is really important. The player has to feel comfortable with what they're doing.
Yeah.
You know, they want to know that they're going to have success with what they're doing on the floor.
Yeah, it doesn't need to look aesthetically pleasing.
Mm.
Like, if it goes in, it goes in. Like, life's pretty good. And even just free throw shooting in these sessions as well. Like, I love get a rep, be a little bit out of breath, go take a foul shot.
Yeah.
Like, just try and replicate that as best you possibly can. All righty.
Something to post on Facebook. Let's go. Like me on Twitter.
All right, so this was from Mike Dunlap during the week, actually, on Twitter. It's my bag, your bag, his or her bag, whatever the case or language, your bag has nothing to do with our team. Great player uses bag to score, but what about using your bag to pass, rebound, or defend? What about that? And this ties in a lot to what we're talking about with individual workouts. I'm going to try and replicate that move that player can do. Well, great. If you still can't box anyone out, she's getting on the court. I think it's relevant. Like, we do have to be careful of this bag mentality of, oh, I've got all these moves. It's like, yeah, but you don't fit into a group of players. Like, it's great to be able to score one-on-one, but we play 5-on-5 basketball or 3-on-3 basketball. You have to be able to work in. So please do be mindful of this when you're in that individual workout space. Doesn't always have to look pretty. It sometimes just needs to be effective more than anything else. Thank you both for jumping in today. Appreciate it. It's We are back. Two episodes left for this year. Core Advantage next week, Mailbag the week after. So thank you both for jumping in. And coaches, we'll catch everyone next week.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Talking Split Podcast. Make sure you like and comment on your favorite podcast platform. And don't forget to share and subscribe so that you never miss an episode.